Hello and welcome to the Frugalpreneur podcast for people who want big venture for little capital. I'm your hostess, Shannon, and on today's podcast, we'll be interviewing Julie Klo, the author of The Work Revolution, Freedom and Excellence for All. In Julie's book, she details some essential knowledge for people who want to run their own business or revolutionize an existing company. Whether you're a frugalpreneur, a work-at-home mom, an Etsy seller, blogger, or you work a 9-to-5 job, this book is full of information that you could use to revolutionize your work experience and implement your own skills and strengths in the new knowledge economy. I love this book so much, I will be giving away a complimentary copy of it on my blog, thefrugalpreneur.com. And today's interview with Julie will highlight some of the great tidbits in the book, but also will let us in on some of her own personal insights on what it was like to write this book while still working her day job and relocating from one side of the country to the next. I truly enjoyed this interview with Julie. She has some great insights on what it's like to be an author, a worker, and a revolutionary herself, so I know you'll enjoy this interview. And check back thefrugalpreneur.com for your chance to win a complimentary copy of this book. Thanks again for Julie for coming on the show. Hi, everyone. This is Shannon from the Frugalpreneur podcast, and we have the amazing Julie Klo on the phone. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Shannon.
Awesome. Julie is the author of The Work Revolution, which was just released last month in April, and it has been doing really well. If you read any of the blogs I follow, it has been out and about, and people are excited about it. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Julie.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Shannon. I am a big fan of you and your work, and so it's just an honor to be here talking to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And for our listeners that may or may not be familiar with you, could you give us a little bit of information about your background and your journey that led you to publishing The Work Revolution?
Sure. So I graduated from graduate school back in 2000. And it was interesting because I actually loved school. I really loved the academic environment. I think because it was so flexible, you could set your own hours and, you know, make your classes when you needed them to be. And then when I entered the work environment, it was a little bit of a letdown. I think as everybody is familiar with the whole notion of 9-to-5 hours and cubicles, and a little bit depressing after having that experience in the academic environment and loving it so much. But I did it, and I adjusted, and after 6 years, I decided I was ready for a change, and I was lucky enough to join Google. Well, needless to say, Google's a great place to work, and so from the very first day that I walked into that job environment, I was astounded at how free I felt working at Google and feeling trusted from the first day that I was on the job. And I felt more trusted on the first day of work at Google than I did on my last day after 6 years in my previous job. And that says a lot. And what that triggered to me was there was a profound difference between the way that most organizations manage and the way that Google manages. That trust issue is just so indicative of it. And so that's when the seed was planted, that I was really passionate for other people to have the same experience that I did, for other people to be able to enjoy work in an environment where they do feel trusted, where they do feel like they can do amazing work and love the work that they're doing. And so over the 5 years that I was at Google, I made more observations during that time that eventually I was able to distill into some high-level principles that I think underscore the distinction between a Google-type environment and a traditional work environment.
Oh, very cool. And so as you began to write the book, because part of the reason I was so excited to have you on the podcast today is that, you know, you wrote this book about work while you were still working. And so you have a day job, you have a very busy life full of travel, speaking, and promoting what you're all about. Can you tell us a little bit more about maybe how some of the principles in the book came to life for you over the last year or so?
Yeah, so it was a big transition for me. I loved the work that I was doing at Google, but I also feel like it's important that we continue to grow in our careers. And so I was at a point where I had to make a decision about whether to move on to a new role at Google, which was given to me as an opportunity, or whether to leave Google and kind of jump the ship, so to speak, or jump the shark. I don't know, you could call it whichever one. Leaving Google is kind of like jumping the shark and pursuing another opportunity. So I did. I decided that the growth opportunities outside of Google were stronger for me, and I joined a financial company in New York. Well, lucky for me, well, I can't say lucky. I would not have joined the company unless I knew that I really believed in the work I was doing with them, and I felt like they got me too. And it was important that I get the understanding up front with them that I was writing this book and it was going to be an important part of my life. Thankfully, because Two Sigma Investments, which is where I work, because they are so understanding and they do have a free work environment like Google, I have the flexibility to get my job done, to do the work that I need to do, but not be there as often as, you know, people who aren't doing a book and speaking schedule. So the first piece to my success in this was really joining an organization that followed the very principles that I was writing about. And that is focusing on impact, not on activities or face time. And it's empowering individuals to do their best work in the way and the time that they feel like they can get that work done. So that was a huge part of it. The second piece to it was it really was my responsibility to manage my own time and to manage my energy and to make really critical choices about what I put on my plate. And one of the principles in my book is the right things, not everything. And it goes back to the notion, or it really addresses full on the notion, that we are in a time in which we are overwhelmed by information, emails, ideas, articles that we should be reading, books we want to be reading. There's no end in sight to things we could be doing. And so it's more critical now than ever that we choose to do the right things and not everything. So, you know, this really came to a head for me when I was writing the book. I couldn't write a book, have a full-time job, juggle the move out here, and expect to be sane unless I said no to a lot of things. And so it meant saying no to TV, so I didn't get cable when I moved out to New York. It meant not going to movies. It meant basically holding myself up every single weekend and doing nothing but writing. So saying no to a lot of social events and things that I could be doing with friends. And that was really my key to managing the whole thing, is really those two pieces. The right things, not everything, and then having a very understanding employer.
Awesome. And so, you know, for those of us that don't have understanding employers, I think what we could take away from that is that sometimes you do have to make certain sacrifices and expect that it's okay to juggle a day job and a family and a life, but also make time, make those sacrifices of sometimes things that bring you pleasure but aren't necessarily fueling your goals, even for a short time, to just sacrifice TV or, you know, going to baseball games or whatever you do for fun. Sometimes you just kind of have to put that on the back burner and expect that your weekends, your evenings, or sometimes even your early mornings are going to be dedicated to, you know, paying the bills, but also fueling your passions. So do you have any pointers on how you can kind of weed that out? Because I think it's a hard thing of knowing what to sacrifice. Did you have any struggles with that or any insights on knowing what to cut?
Oh gosh, I have it every day. But you bring up a very good point, which is, you know, there are many activities in our lives, and the choices that we each make are so representative of who we are. You know, think about it. We have an infinite number of choices every day, from the clothes that we wear, to the food that we eat, to the things that we do, to the people that we're around. And so when you think about those choices in a very deliberate way, it's almost really nice to be forced to make some of those choices rather than just kind of going along in your life and not really thinking about those things. And so when you do make those choices, it really is about, what are my values? What am I passionate about? What's important to me? And so only you as an individual can really answer those questions about what you want to keep in your life versus things that, you know, you choose to sacrifice. So for example, for me, exercise is critically important, both to my mental health, but also to my physical energy. And so while it was a very time-consuming activity that would have taken away from some of the other things that I might have been doing, I felt like it was important to build that in. And so that is something that I have not sacrificed unless I was sick or, you know, maybe there was a week or two here and there that I did, you know, that I let myself slide. But ultimately, that was a very deliberate choice that I made. Now, television, on the other hand, to me, gave no real value at all, like zero. In fact, it would contribute to me, you know, bleeding away hours and time that I could be doing other things. So, for example, I didn't really work or on my book during the week. So I would work all day and come home. And I just found it impossible to switch my brain and context switch into deep writing mode. And so during the week, rather than watching TV at night, which I could have justified, I actually chose to use that time for social activities. So that's when I would go and see friends. I would go out to dinner. And because I was able to get that social interaction during the week, you know, it was less painful, I guess, you know, over the weekends when I had to say no to picnics and outings and all kinds of things that were happening then when I really needed to be writing my book.
Smart. Oh, wow. I think that is a very powerful insight. I know it's something that anyone struggles with when they transition to incorporating more and more of their own business or their passion or their big dream project. You don't want to have to sacrifice, you know, your loved ones and the activities you care about. But sometimes making those changes, even just to cut out TV, is so painful for people. It's like it's a habit. It's like that comforting thing of being able to watch TV. But something I picked up in what you said was that it wasn't necessarily just about making a sacrifice. It was about being really smart and knowing when your energy levels are highest and when you can really get in, you know, the ideal juicy time to get into that project you're working on. So for you, you know, you couldn't just come home and start writing a book after a long day of work, but that would be your time to decompress, still prioritize friends and family, and then on the weekends, really just sit in your pajamas with a big cup of coffee or whatever you would do to really get into the nitty-gritty of your writing. So yep. I think it's like a well-constructed puzzle that you put together based on your own unique fingerprint of what's a priority and what will really fill you up.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's two pieces to that. One, it's about making choices of the activities that you're putting into your life, which I think you really succinctly stated. But I think the other piece that's equally as important is that energy piece. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's paying attention to when you have energy, when you are exhausted and know that you're not going to have any productive brain time. Why sit down and try to force it? You're going to get less done in the same amount of time, and it just doesn't make sense in the end. You know, I could have forced myself to sit down in the evenings and write, but I might have put in, let's say, 10 hours during the week of writing time and might have only been able to eke out, you know, a couple thousand words versus putting in 10 hours on the weekend, I could pound out 6,000 words during that same time. So clearly, my weekend writing time was much more productive. So I think it's a matter of noticing our own patterns of energy. Are you a morning person? Are you a night person? You know, when can you context switch for greater productivity versus when does context switching degrade your productivity over time? And I think we each, again, that's an individual thing of noticing those things and then being disciplined enough to pay attention to our bodies. That if our bodies say you need sleep, that you don't go out and stay up till 1 a.m. and then exhaust yourself for the next 3 days. I'm very guilty of this, you know, so these are decisions that I'm constantly having to, you know, rein myself in and be disciplined about making, and it's not easy.
Oh, I bet. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Writing a book, managing a life, and relocating from, you know, one side of the country to the next, I can imagine you really had to get real with your priorities and be honest about your own learning patterns, your own productivity patterns, and really, instead of just pushing against it, just kind of leaning into who you are and what you're good at and playing up your strengths instead of forcing yourself to live this certain kind of machine mentality that so many of us have learned in our like corporate lives, that, you know, you sit in a chair from 9 to 5 and you're productive that whole time, which, and this is something you touch on in the book, is that you can't just show up and expect to be productive and this machine of a person, but you really have to play to your strengths and your energy levels. And that's one thing I love about your book, is that it's not only applied to an individual, but a whole way of working and a workplace mentality that could shift.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that was, again, another big lesson for me. Knowing that I'm not a morning person, I still made the very unwise decision to try to get into work early when I was starting my new job. I wanted to make a good impression. I wanted people to know that I cared and I was passionate about what I was doing. But what ended up happening is after about 3 weeks, I just saw my energy levels swirling down into the drain. It was terrible. And so I said no. You know, I took a step back and said, wait a minute, I work for a company that really doesn't care when I come into work and when I leave. Why am I doing this? You know, I'm putting expectations on myself that are unreasonable. I'm projecting that other people are looking at me and judging me based on when I arrive in the morning. No, I'm not going to do that anymore. And so I made the choice that unless I had a meeting that I had to get to at work, I was never going to come in before 10 o'clock in the morning. I know myself. I know that I like to sleep in until 8. I know that my brain just does not function for the first 3 hours that I open my eyes. So why try to force myself to get to work and work during those junky hours and get nothing done? But I would come in at 10 and I would work until 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock if I was feeling particularly energetic. And, you know, I was really able to get some quality work done during that time. And it just turned things around utterly and completely. I mean, that was huge for me. So that was one piece of it, the energy piece that you talk about. And then the strengths piece, you know, again, I am lucky because I have a manager who gets me and understands my strengths and honors that. And she gives me a lot of flexibility and autonomy to choose the work that I want to do that brings impact to the organization, but that also plays to my strengths. Mm. And so one of the things that I love is being strategic. So any project that I can be involved in where I'm adding strategic thinking to the mix, those are the projects that I tend to drift towards. And because other people recognize that I can bring a lot of value in that way, then I'm free to do that because other people don't necessarily have that strength that I do. Mm-hmm. So that's one way in which you can negotiate around what you're good at and really use your time at work to be doing the things that you love, which again, you know, leads to higher productivity and ultimately greater satisfaction.
Awesome. And so one question that came up for me as you were discussing that was, you know, how important it is to recognize your own strengths and to develop strategies around those strengths. So whether or not you're working for a company or you're running your own gig, obviously some of us aren't really aware of our own strengths and those kinds of things. So as you figured this out, I'm not sure if you used any resources, if you read any books or used any personality tests or anything. Do you have any advice or resources you could recommend for people that are trying to figure out what their strengths and their patterns are like?
Oh, 100%. Well, first of all, yes, I voraciously read books on this. I don't think I discovered them, however, until I was like in my early 30s, maybe 34, 35. So I spent, you know, the first decade of my career basically flailing around, getting lucky in terms of things that, you know, finding work that I loved doing, but then unlucky in a few cases where I wasn't really self-aware of my strengths and really being able to articulate what they were. But what the aha moment came for me when I took StrengthsFinder 2.0, which is, I think it's, you know, $13-14 on Amazon, you know, worth its weight in gold, essentially. I took the StrengthsFinder test, and what came up as number one for me was strategy, strategic thinking. Mm. And also in my top five was achiever and ideation. And so those things were the aha moment that helped me to look back at my career and go, oh, that's why those particular projects I excelled at. And I was able to then look back and realize that the strategic component to them was really big. And I was able to match those things up to say, I got the most energy when I was working on those particular projects. So even if you don't have vocabulary, you don't take StrengthsFinder, and maybe that's not your thing, what you can do is take notice of your energy levels when you're engaged in different kinds of tasks. And when you feel that tiredness and the sleepiness, and you can't engage your brain, and you're thinking, oh, I can't stand another minute of this, pay attention to what you're doing at that moment. It's very likely that whatever that work is, it's not aligned with your strengths. And then on the other hand, when you're doing work that you're so excited about, you get that fire in your belly and you're just like, ah, oh, can't wait to do this. You know, you just feel that utter sense of excitement. That's when you know that whatever that work is, it's aligned with your strengths. And so just paying attention to your energy levels can tell you a lot about that. But yes, there's tons of resources out there. I mentioned StrengthsFinder. Marcus Buckingham just came out with a new one called Stand Out. There's tons of them out there. And if one doesn't work, try another one, because maybe you'll get an aha moment from a different one. But really explore that. And the more you can put language around your own strengths, the better you can communicate that to people around you who can then funnel work towards you that really aligns with your strengths. I mean, how can you expect people to give you work that you love unless you tell them what you love?
So true. And I think that applies not only to looking for a job, but even if you're doing your own sign projects as well. One of the things I learned the hard way in starting my own blog and then my own business was trying to do everything myself. And because I felt obligated, like, oh, I should learn CSS. I should learn, you know, Photoshop. I should. But I hated doing those things, and it was taking far too long. And so, you know, it drained my energy. It took me a lot longer to reach the results I wanted in other arenas of my business. And so I would doubly high five that, because I think it is one of the biggest things, one of the best things you can do for your career and your business, is to forgive yourself for not loving every aspect of a particular job or piece of work, but to do what you're good at, and don't feel bad if you have to hire somebody like a graphic designer or a coach or whoever it is to kind of get you through the stuff you may or may not like so much, if you can, if you have that
Absolutely.
Kind of freedom.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, I mean, you feel guilty, especially when you're young and you're thinking, well, you know, I'm trying to pull all these pieces together, and how can I possibly justify outsourcing something when I can do it myself, even if it takes longer?
Right.
Well, sometimes that's the right decision. But sometimes it's not, and you have to think of those choices as investments. You know, you have to invest in your own business, and if investing in that means that you pay a couple $100s to outsource something where you could be using that time to make $1,000, that's clearly a great investment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that sometimes we just don't step back to see the implications of how we're spending our time and how that might translate to actual dollars.
Right. Yeah, I know I struggle with that as a graduate student and also a business owner. Just feeling really worried about paying a graphic designer, you know, like $1,000 to do a professional design. I finally hopped on board a couple months ago and had my sites redone. And I have to say, it was scary to put that money down, but it was one of the best experiences ever. And my results, you know, the money has, it's paid for itself. And sometimes, you know, that it doesn't always work out that way. When you hire out somebody to do the dirty jobs you either aren't good at or hate doing, but it really does pay off, even in your peace of mind at the end of the day.
Yes, absolutely. And I think part of it is just choosing to live a life in which you have faith that investing your time in the things that really are, you know, the combination of your passion and your strengths and things that can add value, that having faith, it will pay off in the long run. And choosing not to do the things that just really, you know, lie within your weak areas, that, you know, it might be tough, and sure, there might be some decisions you make that won't pay off. But over time, you know, if you look at the long-term payoff, that it eventually will be the right choices. It's hard to do, but I really respect people who do make those choices consistently, and I learn from them every day. You know, Jenny Blake is a really good example of this. She's got her Life After College business and her blog and all these other things, and I'm constantly in awe of the choices that she makes to stay aligned with what she does best and say no to the things that she doesn't. And sometimes I'm like, oh, how could she turn that down? Or why, you know, how is she so courageous to make those choices? But she does, and it pays off for her. And, you know, I learn from her all the time just by watching that.
Yeah, I as you know, I'm a big fan of Jenny, and I've worked with her, and I think she's amazing. And I think faith is One of those, it's not a dirty word in business, but I think it's one of those things that we want data, we want analytics, we want statistics to back up our choices.
Right.
Sometimes you don't have that. And
right.
I think you and Jenny both are great examples of having faith in your passions, because if you don't, if you end up, you know, throwing in the towel and just saying, oh, I'm going to work a job I hate, whatever, you know, you can work a job you hate in the short term for long-term benefits, you know, to fund your business or whatever. But, you know, sometimes the safest bet isn't really a safe bet at all. And so you've put all your time and money into a company you could care less about only to have them fire you.
Right.
Instead, that time could have been spent, you know, living a little bit for today and investing in your values. And so I think faith, even though sometimes people, you know, don't really know how to take that in a business setting, I think it's one of the most vital and renewable resources we need to focus on in our business. And just having faith that you've made the right choice and know that even if you made the wrong choice, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the theme for today. I hear this over and over and over again, and I'm so thrilled that it's becoming part of our mantra in society today is to fail fast. Mm-hmm. You know, failure is an acceptable thing to do, and people are starting to realize that that failure process is part of the process, will always be part of the process, that messiness is just inherent in trying things and going for what you believe in and where your passions lie and where you can add value. And using that faith is the fuel to essentially get you there. You're right. It is kind of a strange word to use in the context of business, and yet it's so appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Wow. This has been chock full of amazing insights. And so before we wrap this up today, because I know you are a busy lady and you're out and about today, but do you have any lasting words of wisdom or closing statements you want to make to our audience?
Well, I was inspired. I'm at the American Society for Training and Development Conference here in Denver, and it's been really phenomenal just being around a ton of learning professionals who are just passionate about learning. But Jim Collins was the keynote speaker, and one of the things that I loved that he talked about was, you know, what is your hedgehog concept? This is a concept from his book, Good to Great, that applies to companies. But he said, you know, one of the things that you've got to figure out for yourself is, you know, who you are and what your hedgehog concept is. And what he said was, it's one, what you're passionate about, but not just that, because your passions don't always lead to money. But number two, what you are best at or better than anybody else around you. And number three, where you are useful in a way that society values. And that's where the money piece comes in. So passion and kind of what you're genetically coded to do, what you're best at, combined with where you can add value to society, if you put those three things together and keep pursuing that passionately, that's ultimately, I think, what will lead you along the right path.
Very cool. Wow, those are some powerful statements to close on. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your experiences with the Frugalpreneur audience. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shannon, so much. What a great conversation.
Awesome. Well, you have a good time in Denver, and I will be posting this up on the site very soon. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Shannon.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.